we didn't have time during. Thank you also for helping me catch up on schedule and to compensate for my earlier tardiness, so thank you very much. One thing I'd ask, too, for speakers, when you're asked a question, please answer into the microphone, and if possible, please repeat the question. That way we'll keep a better record of the session, so if I could make that request to people. Our next talk, a very important topic of the issue of management of grids, will be given by Professor Crow and her colleagues from the University of Missouri of Science and Technology, located in Rolla, Missouri. And the title of the talk is Future Renewable Energy Delivery and Management, the Freedom System.
Thank you. Good morning. Okay, what I'm going to be talking about today is a large project that we're working on at Missouri S&T. And this is a project which has been funded by the National Science Foundation. This is an engineering research center. So before I talk about what we're doing, I just want to spend a few minutes and say, tell everybody what an engineering research center is funded by the National Science Foundation. These NSF engineering research centers promote partnerships between universities, both domestically and internationally, in different disciplines to essentially target critical aspects of technology development and also workforce development. These centers are funded for roughly $20 million or over 5 years, and it is renewable for up to 10 years. And the Freedom Center, which is the project or the center that we're working on, is the only engineering research center in power and energy engineering. Our program manager we're very lucky to have here today is Dr. Barbara Kenny, and she is actually going to be speaking this afternoon. So if you want to listen to the National Science Foundation perspective, please do join us this afternoon. So let's just start a little bit about, you know, what is some of the things that we're looking at. And I think many of our speakers have talked, both yesterday and today, about energy and where we get energy from. And so I'd like to focus a little bit more on just simply electricity. Since that is the aspect of the energy sector that we are looking at in terms of the center. This is where we get electricity from for the United States. And as you can see, we get most of our electricity from coal. Now, here in the state of Missouri, that number is much greater than 50%. We are up to 80 or 85% of our electricity from coal. But you can also see here where some of the other electricity comes from. Obviously nuclear, where we do get some of our power here in the state of Missouri from nuclear. We have a plant up in Callaway, owned by Ameren, owned and operated by Ameren. Hydroelectric, most of this is out in the West Coast. We do get quite a bit of our electricity from Canada from hydroelectric sources. Natural gas, petroleum, but you can also see the very small segment there from other renewables. These are the non-hydro renewables that we like to think of in terms of geothermal, wind, and solar. Okay, talking about electricity. You know, electricity is a good deal, bottom line. If you can see, you know, since, you know, Edison and Westinghouse first developed electric generation, you know, well over 100 years ago, the price has dropped dramatically. And I don't think a lot of people realize what a good deal electricity is. Also, you can look here. The yellow in the map of the United States is where the cheapest electricity is, and that's also what we call the coal belt. So obviously, where we have coal, we have cheap electricity. Missouri, you can see, is one of the cheapest electricity states in the United States. Mm-hmm. In fact, Newburgh, the city of Newburgh, which is a small town just west of Rolla, recently there was a big article in the newspaper, and they were really screaming about their electricity rates had gone up 15%. They had gone up from 4.2 cents per kilowatt hour to 4.9 cents per kilowatt hour. So, you know, Missouri, we have it good. And this is one of the reasons people have moaned and groaned about how far we are behind adopting many of the new renewable resources. But really, we have very cheap electricity from coal. So that really, that cost or price incentive is not there for us to pursue some of those technologies. Let's talk just simply about reliability. All of us are used to cars that break down or you know, computer systems that crash. But we have come to believe that electricity is our God-given right. And part of that, too, is really our infrastructure has been built on the reliability of the power system. And so this just gives you kind of a rundown. This is from DOE, some of the cost per hour of loss of electricity. And you can see that many of those things are very significant. Brokerage operations, for example, you know, if we're without power, without electricity for an hour, nearly $7 million in losses. So it's really in our best interest to keep the lights on. And part of this is why we have still electricity as a kind of a quasi-regulated in a commodity, because it is there for the good of society. Okay, so let's talk about now bringing renewables into this picture. Today, the optimistic forecast for renewable energy in 2050 is still relatively small. You know, and that's technological and that's economic. What we would really like to see is, of course, increasing the green and renewable energy and trying to really increase the amount that we use over the next 40 years. And that's one of the things that our center is going to be looking at, is developing the technologies to make this possible. And so we need innovation and we need industry transformation. It's not just research, we need development to go along with that. And that's one of the things that our Engineering Research Center brings to the forefront, is really the partnerships between academia, the research end, and also the development or the industry participation. Another thing that we need to understand is energy is not necessarily equal to the environment. If we solved the environmental problem today, we would still have an energy problem, and vice versa. We could solve our energy crisis and the environmental crisis would still be there. But taken together, if we can take this together, we can solve both problems in really a gracious and great graceful manner. One way we like to think about the next generation energy infrastructure is to correlate it to the internet. Many of you, if you're my age or older, remember really when the transistor hit the market. I remember calculators really the size of shoeboxes, mainframes that would take up a room this size. And they really didn't do much. They were very hierarchically oriented. But really through technology, the building of better transistors, smaller, faster, and the manufacturing processes to make those very small switching, we now have high-speed digital electronics. And so we're seeing the same kind of revolution in terms of power electronics now that we saw 40, 50 years ago. And so if you think back 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, some of the technologies that we now have available to us, the internet, Facebook, eBay, Amazon.com, e-trading, all of these things we couldn't have thought about 10 years ago. And so I sit here today, or I stand here today, and I really don't know what technologies we're going to see in the energy sector 10 years or 20 years from now because of the technologies that we're building today. But I can tell you that it will be very different than it is today. So our vision, the vision of our Engineering Research Center, is really an efficient and revolutionary power grid. What we want to do is we want to integrate distributed and scalable alternative energy sources and storage with existing power systems. All right, we want to facilitate a green-based energy economy. We want to mitigate the growing energy crisis, and we want to reduce the impact of carbon emissions. You know, many of you, if you want to buy a laptop anymore, you can go to Staples, you know, Walmart. And really, we want to see the time and place where we could go to Walmart, we could go to Lowe's, and we could buy our own energy system, and we could plug it in. We can't do that right now, but we want to be able to do it just like you buy a new refrigerator or dryer. You know, just go buy it and plug it in, and it works. So that's what we're working towards. So our center goals are to develop fundamental and enabling technologies and demonstrate the freedom system. We want to foster a revolution in innovation and technology. And very importantly, I don't want to gloss over this, we want to build an educated workforce. We want more people to go into science, engineering, and technology. And we need that. That's the future of our nation. That's the future of our world. So as I said before, what we're really looking at is a paradigm shift like the internet. All right, so the pre-1980s, we had the centralized mainframes, but now we had a paradigm shift through the internet. And so now today we have things that we couldn't have dreamed of, that our parents couldn't have dreamed of, you know, 50 years ago through innovation and industry transformation. So we have ubiquitous use, ubiquitous ownership. You can go into Starbucks and plug in, and now you're part of the internet. It's an amazing thing. We can connect and talk to people in China, in India, in real time. So what we're looking for is a paradigm shift. It's just the same, except now in the energy sector. And this is going to be done through combining, obviously, communication and energy. So what we're looking at is looking at our centralized generation, or what we call the legacy grid. And through our freedom system, what we're going to do is be able to incorporate ubiquitous, widely utilized energy sources. And so we're going to look for new technologies and a whole new energy sector that we really can't imagine what it will look like. So we're going to develop a new delivery system, plug and play, of distributed renewable energy, anytime and anywhere. So the analogy I like to think about is if you think about your laptop computer, right? Everybody has a laptop. Okay, so you can plug it in into the wall outlet, right? That's analogous to a grid tie, tying into the legacy grid. But if you unplug it, it still works, right? You don't lose anything. You know, hopefully your computer doesn't crash if you unplug it. It still works. But internal to the laptop, it has switched to a new power saving mode. And many of you, if you go into the settings on your laptop, you can actually pick a number of preset operating modes, or you can set your own. You know, how long you want your monitor on, when you want your hard drive to go to sleep, things like that. And that's the way we see the future home, where you can go in, you can have preset values, or you can go ahead and set your own. When you're on grid tie, when you're on renewable energy, when you're running off your battery. We've heard a lot about energy storage, and I really think that that's part of the holy grail of our next energy system, is having good mechanisms for energy storage. And the technology will be there. I do believe, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. We will need it, and I believe the technology will be there. But also along with this, we need not only the hardware technology, we need the brains of the system. We need a new energy and power management system. And that's what we're going to be building up, distributed intelligence, so that the grid itself can make decisions about whether to run off the legacy grid, to run off a battery, how to utilize the distributed energy resources out there. It will make the decisions for itself. And it will have reliable and secured communication. Obviously, once we go to something that is far more computer-based, we do have far more potential for, you know, hackers or things to go wrong. I just read an article in USA Today this morning talking about the amount of hacking that's going on in our internet. Well, I think we have to realize the same thing will happen with our internet, our energy internet as well. And so there's a whole new field there that will be developed. So what are some of the challenges, the technological challenges for the integration of renewable generation? We're going to have issues with stability, with transients. We know how to deal with, you know, large inertia machines, generators, synchronous machines. What we don't know how to deal with is when we have a bunch of these small distributed ones. You know, we're talking the whale versus the minnows here. We've been working with the whales. We don't know how to work with the minnows yet. Regulation, how to dispatch. Obviously, we know that the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine. So renewable energy to this point has been considered to be non-dispatchable. And the unfortunate thing that we have is that electricity must be generated at the instant that it is used. That's the way it works. And so we have to be able to plan or dispatch our energy. Another thing that we have to look at in terms of pricing and market rules is electricity. You know, I showed you at the slide at the very beginning that I said it was 8 cents per kilowatt hour, but it's not. It really depends on when you use your electricity. It's much cheaper at night and very expensive during the day. That's just simply the average price. So we're going to see a lot more of, you know, time of use rates. Obviously during the day or at 3 o'clock or 6 o'clock when everybody goes home and turns on their air conditioner and starts making dinner and takes a shower and you know, we see everything, you know, all the electricity go up. That's when the utilities have to bring on their expensive generation. When things run off in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. in the morning and the only thing running are the traffic lights, that's what we call base load. And that's very cheap electricity. So what we'd like to do is really have a mechanism for being able to take advantage of this, you know, time of use rates. You know, maybe with smart appliances, you know, running our dryers in the middle of the night, running our dishwashers. I know many appliances do have that now. I know our dishwasher has a 4-hour delay on it. We can put the soap in, turn it on, and hit the 4-hour delay, and it will come on 4 hours later. But we still have to do that manually. I see a world where that will all be done intelligently. So what is going to make this happen? What is going to be our killer application here? And from the technological standpoint, that is what we call power electronics. As I said before, you know, what really made the microelectronic or high-speed digital design area work was essentially materials. And I think we heard from Dr. Shubra this morning, I'm glad to see some people are working in it, making high voltage, high current devices faster, better, cheaper. I do believe this is going to happen. And this is what's going to drive the technology. It is happening today. So here's what we foresee for a Freedom System. This could be your neighborhood or your town. What we're going to have, as you can see at the bottom, we call these IEMs. These are Intelligent Energy Management Systems. They will manage themselves, they will manage the neighborhood, they will manage the distributed energy storage devices, the distributed renewable energy resources, they will manage the load. And they will communicate through this brain, this distributed grid intelligence, to talk to each other and manage themselves. It will make automated, intelligent decisions. And then, of course, we have that tie back to the legacy grid. We are not going to get rid of the legacy grid. We have to learn to work with it. And this also makes the problem a little more complex. I mean, and how many systems do we have where you still have to work with things that were built 50 years ago? Not many. How many of you have a car that's 50 years old? Right? But in the power system, that's one thing we do have to work with, because it's far too expensive to go and retrofit everything in the electricity sector. So this is really what we see. This is what our project is working on. We are starting from our basic research, which is down at the bottom. We're going up through some enabling technologies. And at the very end, we hope within, at the end of our project, the Engineering Research Center, to have an intelligent energy management system and an intelligent fault management system, IFM. And they all build one on the other. Okay, so some of the fundamental science that we're working on is, as I said before, what's going to drive this is our high-speed power electronics. And so what we have there, and these things fit in our hand. You know, you think of a transistor, the kind that's in your computer, you can't see it. You need a microscope or an electronic microscope to be able to see those. These are much bigger, but you can see them. But we are working at making them smaller and faster. So we want a 15 times improvement in speed and power. We're also looking at improved battery technology, storage technologies. One of the things, as I said before, that's going to make all of this possible is new storage mechanisms. We're also looking at trading out our conventional transformers, which are essentially just big hunks of metal, and replacing them with smart switching devices where we can control the amount of power flow through them, we can control the voltage and current. Also the high power lithium ion batteries. So we've talked about small scale batteries, but also the large stationary batteries as well. We have broad industry support for this. That's, as I said, one of the key aspects of this Engineering Research Center is our ties in with industry. So if you're an industry out there in the audience and you'd like to talk to me about becoming part of our consortium, I would be more than happy to provide you with information and get you set up in doing that. And you can see your name here on this. As I said before, one of really our major aspects of this is more than just simply the technology, it's the brain power that we're developing. And so we're developing not only our college and graduate students, but also we have a pipeline down into the elementary schools. We are working with a number of middle schools and high school teachers. We are educating the teachers because they have the most impact. I don't have much impact other than my two children, and you know, that's debatable how much impact I have on them. But if I can impact the teachers, if I can get the teachers engaged in this, they know how to engage the next generation of students. So here's our pre-college outreach. We currently have partnerships with 9 middle and 5 high schools. RETs is the research experience for teachers. There's 54 over 5 years. If you know a teacher locally who would like to participate in that, also let me know and I can get you hooked up with doing this. We have young scholars. These are high school students that we bring into our labs over the summer, and we hope to have 100 over the next 5 years. Summer academic programs. I know that we have a couple of posters up about some of our aspects that we have with our summer programs. Here's our team. As you can see, it's a very large team. We have 5 institutions domestically, ourselves, North Carolina State, Arizona State, Florida State and Florida A&M, and we also have a number of international universities that are partnered with us. We have a number of affiliated universities that bring some technology in that we don't specifically have. Our national laboratories, we heard from Dr. Joan Woodard yesterday from Sandia National Laboratories, certainly NREL and NETL. We have industry partners and also our pre-college partners. And lastly, we do have a number of people who are involved in advisory boards to keep us on track so that we don't get stuck up in our ivory towers. So lastly, if you have any questions as we run out of time, there's my contact information. And I'd be happy to talk to anybody who's interested in this.
We have time for about one question, and I just might ask that if you could repeat the question. Any questions? Yes, sir. The person in this last.
Well, let me pick one of my two questions.
Please.
Is there any concern about a phantom load addition to this technology as far as, like, can we have a single unit that is doing the intelligence within the building as opposed to every single appliance is using a few milliwatts? It's a common efficiency concern with phantom loads.
Okay, that was really a multifaceted question, but the question was pertaining to phantom load within homes and how we plan to deal with energy efficiency. I think really, you know, drilling down in terms of the intelligent house and how that will work, you know, that is one of the aspects that will have to be looked at. Most of what we're doing is outside of the house. And most of that is going to come from really a house level smart house. And I do believe that will come, but you know, there is a lot of phantom load that goes on that I think a lot of people are not aware of in your own home or office. And just to let you know what a phantom load is that something that has a load that you may not realize. For example, the clock on your microwave. You know, it's always there. Do you really need it? I know I walk into my kitchen and I have a clock on my microwave, a clock on my oven, a clock on the wall, a clock on the VCR. You know, so I have all of these things telling me what time it is, usually not synchronized. And the question is do you really need all of that? Those are what we call phantom loads. And I think to improve efficiency and conservation, I think people have talked about the importance of conservation in really this energy crisis. We're going to have to get a better handle on what some of these phantom loads are. And yes, I think that would be a very important part in terms of the smart integration of the household.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that outstanding summary. That was very, very good.